You are now listening to the Life Is Not Complicated, You Are Strong Opinions podcast with mentor, role model, proven philanthropist, and best-selling author, your host, Carlos Wallace.
All right, we're back with you on the Life Is Not Complicated, Strong Opinions podcast, and I'm with my man, Sean. Now, unlike the other episodes, I just met this young man last week. And, I know all the other guests that I've had on here. And this young man, he was so impressive when I met him. I met him in class. They had to do this exercise based on my book, The Other 99 Times. And he was so impressive that I said, look, I have to have you on my podcast. I'm doing this series with millennials. And young man, you fit exactly what I'm trying to do.
Oh, I appreciate it, man. I really do. Hey, really do.
So tell them who you are and share a little bit about yourself,
bro. All right. So my full name, Sean Alexander Bogle Jr. I'm 23 years old. I live in Houston. I live in Missouri City, more specifically. I moved from Virginia Beach 2007, around age 12. I went to college at Texas Lutheran University. I played football 2 years when I was there. I'm an athlete. I played baseball in high school too. Also, right now, like you said, I'm in grad school getting my master's in psychology at Houston Baptist. My plan is to get my master's in data analytics from U of H downtown, and then afterwards look for an MBA. But we'll see what happens down the road then.
And you hear that? This man has a plan. Now, y'all see why I got him on, right? Hey, it's nothing more exciting than for me to hear a young man, or woman for that matter, but a person with a plan. Even if you don't fulfill it, just to have one, you know, that alone just gets me excited. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And y'all heard him mention he was an athlete.
Yeah.
You know, I want to start with that. What we talked about in class.
Oh, yeah.
And Tom Izzo chewing out the player during the game. He got all in the player's face, and it sparked a little debate in class and how the girls were saying, that's just wrong.
Yeah.
He shouldn't get in his face like that.
I thought it was a little hilarious because the girls were some of the girls in there were athletes. And
right.
They were acting like they had never, you know, seen someone get chewed out before.
Well, I later found out, I asked Dr. Sawyer what type of athlete. She said horseback riding. I said, oh, well, that kind of explains.
Yeah.
That don't really count.
Nah. If when you're in the arena in the high intensity sport,
yes.
Not to say horseback riding is it, but
yeah.
Football.
I thought she was a volleyball player.
Yeah, you know.
Or something like that.
Soccer.
That's, yeah. Horseback riding. I'm talking about high intensity, competitive. Grueling.
Oh, and you know, it goes back to, you know, the reason why it was brought up in the first place, the other 99 times.
Right.
You know, we all look at, oh, this is the one instance, it looked bad, you know, he's a coach, he's supposed to be a leader. But in the reality of the moment is, it was a timeout.
Right.
It was a freshman.
Right.
In a high intensity situation, you have to... It's a scene, but you have to make the scene.
Right.
That's how you get through. That's how players learn from their mistakes.
Right.
And, you know, it was cool to see the two different sides go. But I think ultimately, I think they realized, no, you know, that is Tom Izzo. You know,
right.
From day one, that's who he is.
Absolutely.
He's that type of coach. He's in your face. He's going to teach you. And
mm-hmm.
That's his teaching style.
Right.
And, you know, you have to be able to accept that. If you can't, there's tons of other schools you can go play basketball.
That's
for.
Right.
So, you know, it's what you sign up for. But, you know.
And let's put it in perspective. I mean, Tom Izzo, A, is a legendary coach.
Mm-hmm.
And B, it's the big dance, right? There's a lot of coaches that wouldn't even trust a freshman to play in the big dance. So for him to trust the freshman means he believes in the kid
mm-hmm.
right off bat. You know what I mean? That means he says, hey, he sees something in the kid that we don't see or that we don't even know about, right?
Oh.
So, and probably see something that the kid didn't even see in himself. You know, and Izzo is known for bringing the greatness out of his players.
And the young players, good enough to, it took him to the Final Four.
Took him to the Final
now
Four.
Now they're looking back, oh, who cares about the yelling?
Hey, I think if there were people mad about the yelling, and the kids said, what are y'all upset about? Like, he hadn't even thought twice about
it. You saw the other players in the huddle. They were like, oh, it's all right. This is normal.
Another day at the office. You know what I mean? They didn't get bent out of shape about it. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I told you that night, man. I think ESPN is the best and worst thing that happened to sports, because it starts to elaborate on things that really has nothing to do with sports. Mm-hmm. It brings in the gossip and just the additives that has nothing to do with competition.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I don't like that. Mm-hmm. It just started to take away from the game.
It does.
And it waters it down. And now we start to talk about stuff that just don't matter.
And as a former athlete, I know, you know, when you're playing, you're all the workouts, the early morning, you know, running, lifting, you're not even concerned about all the stuff that's going on in the social media.
Right.
So to have people criticize you and say certain things about you in that light,
right?
It just, that's why they react so harshly, because they're like, you know, who are you to say, you know, about this or that?
Exactly.
You know, criticize me on my game, not... Right. The other gossip,
exactly.
All the other stuff.
Yeah, you're not at 2 a day. you know, you're not at film session at 6 a.m.
Oh, when coach is yelling at you for no reason.
That's right.
And then, you know, you have to go to class right after that.
Exactly.
Then it's a completely different world that you can't even imagine.
As you youngsters say, you don't know my life.
No, don't. They think that we don't wake up early until we get a job.
Right.
But, I mean, kids have been waking up early their whole lives, if you think about it.
That's
going
right.
to school.
That's right.
When you go to college, when you're playing sports or an extracurricular activity, you could be doing, you know, some imagination project, but your team may say, we got to meet up at 7 a.m.
Yeah.
You're a kid. You're waking up early, just like adults do.
That's right. My son was a scholarship athlete. He played football in college, man, and they would have workout at 6, and he had class at 8, and I was like, dude. And then he wouldn't get back to his dorm till like 9 o'clock at night. You know what I mean? I was like, man. And then get the next day, same thing. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? This is 5 days a week.
Mm-hmm.
Then they play on Saturday. I'm like, when do you have time to do anything?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And even now, he's 30, and he still keeps that same regimen. He work out every morning at 5 a.m.
It stays with you all throughout life.
Yeah, like I was like, dude. And he's just as fit now at 30 as he was at 20.
Similar to the military.
Yeah. And it's about having that discipline, you know.
Need it.
Yeah, it's crazy. So in college, you know, we heard your plan, and you've pretty much been in college for the last 4 years. And I know you have a high GPA because I know you. But what would you say is your greatest challenge in school?
Greatest challenge I'd probably say is trying to learn with other people around you who may not be so motivated to learn. And believe it or not, it's something that a lot of people feel. A lot of people come into class with different baggage. You may have just come out of another class that you think is more stressful, or that you prioritize over this class. And so, you know, you're asked to do these group activities, or, you know, whenever, even, you know, just the teacher conversing with his or her students, if there's no feedback, that affects everyone else. You know, how are we supposed to learn if no one's asking questions, if no one's engaged in whatever the lesson is? So I find it kind of odd sometimes that, especially in college, you spend this money, and I know a lot of times it's loans, or, you know, you have someone else paying on your behalf, but you're sitting in class for 50 minutes, an hour and a half, and you don't say a word, or you're in the back of the class and the whole time you're texting, or you're on your phone, you know, watching YouTube videos. And it's like, you're there, participate.
But you're not really there.
And it does affect the other people. I think it's a challenge, because then for a student who tries to come to class prepared, because my biggest fear is, wow, what if I come and the teacher starts asking me questions? I don't know what to say. Now I feel like I'm on the spot.
You want to be prepared.
I want to be prepared, and I also want to be prepared for the other kids in the class now, or, you know, adults in the class. That's a challenge on me, because I have the responsibility of these other students to be prepared, when it's like, we should all be prepared.
Right,
you know, it shouldn't just be, oh, this person comes to class and he took notes because he did the reading. So whenever the teacher asks those questions, he's going to be able to answer them. No, I mean, everyone should be able to participate, mention, chime in, And without doing that, oh, it's just stressful.
Everybody should feel that same pressure.
You know, because when it comes, you all know the tests are coming. So mm-hmm. to say the tests are challenging, that's, you know, too cliche. But when you actually think about the people who go to class every day, but don't do anything, you know, right. you're there, but you're not really participating in the lesson.
Right.
Then it's kind of like you're not even there at some right. point. So. Yeah, I think that's a huge challenge.
That's interesting. Mm-hmm. That's interesting. It's like, let's go back to football.
Mm-hmm.
You could be the receiver that runs the perfect route, but if the left tackle doesn't do his job and the quarterback is sacked, it doesn't matter how perfect your route is,
because mm-hmm.
the pass won't get off.
It won't happen.
You know,
and if it starts affecting everybody.
It affects everybody.
The quarterback, that's it affects
right.
the running back.
That's right.
And, you know, I noticed, like, to use your analogy, how the receiver is off, how that affects. It affects the teacher, because now the teacher's
off.
You know, because they're like, do I change the syllabus because they don't seem that interested? And it's like, that's not fair.
That's
you
right.
know, that's not fair to anyone.
That's
How are
not
you
fair
succeed?
To anyone. And like in football, it even affects the defense, because now they're on the field too much.
Mm-hmm.
And so they wear out. It all goes back because the left tackle is not doing his job.
One person
is affecting the whole team.
The whole team. It's amazing.
Yeah, and now you see why I wrote Game Day.
Yeah, no, that chapter breaks it down perfectly, because you don't realize it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't think, oh, by me not saying anything, because you've just been doing that the whole time, you're actually affecting other people in the class.
Right.
You have to come ready. You have to come prepared. You
right.
have to be, you know, ready to know, oh, we're supposed to be on chapter 8 today.
Mm-hmm.
Last week we didn't finish chapter 7, so we're
right.
probably going to be doing a little bit of both.
Right.
Let me familiarize myself with what we left off with last. It's
exactly.
the game plan, you know.
Exactly.
It's coming
exactly.
in ready. It's all preparation.
And you know, I've gone into classes and I've had both guys and girls say, you know, I didn't really get that chapter because I don't like football.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, you didn't read it, because I clearly say, even if you don't like football, you will get this chapter. And I break down why, and the analogy is simple enough for a fifth grader to get.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know what I mean?
It is.
And so when a person say, yeah, I didn't really get it, well, you didn't read it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And I can tell right away if you read it or not.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but speaking of being prepared, it was a young lady in the classroom that she went to Dr. Sawyer the day before, and she was just nervous. The young lady that said she read the book last night.
Oh, yes, yeah.
And she was just over the top nervous because she hadn't read it. And she said, man, I didn't realize Mr. Wallace was going to be here. So I have to read this book
yeah.
because there's no way I'm not going to be prepared when he comes here. And had I not known that, I would have never known that she didn't read it, because she was really prepared.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
she summarized it well.
Oh my God! I mean, between your summary, hers, and the older gentleman, I can't think of his name, but
Norm.
Norm,
yeah.
You got your three was very, very impressive, and but yeah, had I not known, I would have never known that she read it in one night.
Yeah.
But that it goes to what you're saying about she didn't want to be the one to not be prepared.
Mm-hmm.
And that's impressive. Did you feel the same way?
I did feel the same way, and I think it goes back to keeping that responsibility. I feel like there's a responsibility to not only do the assignment, but do it well. So for some people, you know, they're just like, oh, I just got to put something together to present it. I was thinking, I have a pretty good grade in this class, so I know Dr. Sawyer may be expecting something a little bit better. So I put the responsibility on myself to say, I'm gonna read it before, like a good month before, so I can start working on this, making sure that it's not just a presentation I put together at the last minute.
Right.
I actually worked on and prepared and then put some thought into it, you know, so I can, you know, have a good presentation. But all in all, I do feel like a lot of the pressure of this assignment, you know, going back to the class portion of it, was knowing that you were gonna be there. Because if we were just giving the chapter presentation over the book, it would have been easy to kind of give our own perspective.
Right.
But
right.
we had to give our own opinion and our own perspective of it with the actual person who wrote it in the room. So there were a lot of questions that were being asked, right, you know, right. to you while we were presenting, because we were challenging you in some respects, but we were right. challenging your thinking. You know, we wanted right. to know where you were coming from and how you got there.
Right.
So it was cool to you know, play around with and
right.
meet and actually get it done at the same time.
So, yeah, I appreciate it. And you even mentioned that you had the audio first.
Yeah.
And you was like, man, it's too many good one-liners and quotes. I have to get the book.
Got to get the book.
and you even spoke with your mother about it.
Yeah, I did. She's a principal at an elementary
right.
school in Missouri City. And I asked her, I said, have you ever heard of Carlos Wallace? She said, no, I haven't heard of him, but I'll be on the lookout. Why? I said, well, we're asked to read his book in class and we're going to give a presentation in front of him. She said, well, I hope you're ready. And after, you know, getting everything squared away and reading it, and, you know, first I listened to it, like you said, and I was just, I got through it pretty quickly, and I was like, wow, I wanted to listen to it again. So I waited till the next day, listened to it. I said, there were a lot of quotes that I picked out of there. Mm-hmm. And for me, I'm very visual. I got to see it. And then once I see it, it's really ingrained in my mind. So then I went ahead and then got the ebook on Amazon and I read it. And then I, you know, showed my mom and she was like, oh, this is an awesome book. And I was trying to let her know that, you know, when you came and you spoke to us afterwards, you didn't envision this being in the educational realm as soon as it did.
Right,
and
right.
I was saying, Mom, you know, with the advances of technology, this book could really be in high schools. You know, these high schools now have iPads, and I was like, these books can be uploaded to them in the matter of minutes.
Right.
And this is something that they don't actually have, like you said, have to read the whole book.
Right.
It
right.
can just be taking a college senior reading the chapter about door money. Uh-huh. Oh, that would be perfect.
Right,
all
right.
it takes is one day, one lesson, and one class period to talk yeah. about it. That'd be awesome, I think, you know, because you need it at different times in your life.
Right.
Not
right.
just when you're an adult.
Yeah. And it's amazing the amount of young people that appreciate door money. Because mm-hmm. I wrote that chapter specifically for older people, you know, say mid-30s and up, mm-hmm. because that's usually about the time, man, I'm just chasing the bag. I'm like, dude. There's things way more important, you know yeah. what I mean? Because usually when you're younger, it's just wilding and having fun, you know what I mean? But apparently you guys started a lot sooner than us, you know,
yeah.
than we did, you know. I'm glad y'all getting it, you yeah. know what I mean?
I think a lot of it, we're flashed with social media.
Right,
but
right.
a lot of this stuff, you know, what it takes to look good, you know, yeah. a lot of high maintenance, mm-hmm. branding. And so it's really quick and easy to fall into that trap of spending money you don't even have yet.
Right.
So if you're able to get that mindset ingrained early on, like, okay, hold on. When you do get an opportunity to chase that back, you can wait.
Right,
you can
right.
wait. You know, you can start telling yourself now, I can wait.
Right.
When I do it, I can wait.
Right.
And I think that's actually going to be helpful for a lot of people.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope so, because I tell youngsters all the time, man, the only difference between a $30 belt and a $300 belt is a buckle. That's the only difference. Because leather is still leather.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so the Levi belt or the Gucci belt, it's the same thing.
It's going to hold your pants up.
The only difference is the buckle. That's it. You know, so don't get caught up in the buckle, man.
Mm-hmm.
So, hey, that's a good place to take a break, man. We'll be right back with you. My main man, Sean, we'll be right back with you on the Life Is Not Complicated Strong Opinions podcast. The things students say, like, you know, man, because of this book, I didn't commit suicide. Because of this book, I can now speak in public and come out of my shell. Because of this book, I'm not so worried about what other people say about me, you know, not looking for their validation. That's what touches me.
My favorite chapter was about not letting either your boss, boyfriend, girlfriend, mother, family, anybody get in your way of being successful in whatever it is you want to do.
To purchase Life Is Not Complicated, You Are, or the other 99 times, or to download the audio versions, please visit carloswallace.com.
All right, we're back with you on the Life Is Not Complicated Strong Opinions podcast. We're going to switch gears a little bit, man. We're going to talk a little bit about the politics. You comfortable with that?
I'm all right.
You good?
That's cool.
You good? All right. You've been following the political landscape?
Yeah. So, yeah, I've been watching.
So give me your views. Tell me what you think.
So what I think. I'm a youngster, so I'm not supposed to really have that big of a voice. No, what I noticed, it's a big shift. Mm-hmm. I noticed a big shift. I'm 23 years old. Mm-hmm. For 8 years of my life, Barack Obama was president. Mm-hmm. To go from a presidency where there was very little to criticize. Mm-hmm. There was a lot to dislike. There was a lot to...
Barack was political.
Yeah. But
he was PR friendly.
Exactly. Okay. Like, you know what I'm saying? And so I think the difference, what I'm noticing is there's a lot of coverage.
Yeah.
There's a lot of focus. There's a lot of attention.
Mm-hmm.
And with that, there's a lot of people who are angry because of it. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of people who are happy that we're finally bringing these important issues to light, to a bigger
forefront.
Magnification.
I agree.
And so what I think is, I think that what I see, we have a lot of people who like mm-hmm. what they see.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people who are offended because how can you be in agreement with something who's so, not, you know, dismissive, but very divisive, mm-hmm. you know, it divides a lot of people. You know, you should want someone in office who represents everyone, mm-hmm, who represents mm-hmm. one nation. But at the end of the day, you can't change the way people feel.
Right.
So what I think we should start doing is we should start taking a better approach to how we want to make change.
Mm-hmm.
I think we should start doing things in a better light as far as promoting others who should be promoted. So mm-hmm. I think a lot of attention goes to the wrong thing. We promote a lot of reality stars and this and that, and to some degree that's how our current president got to where he is, because of that stardom. And I think if more focus and more light was shined on people who did good in the community,
right.
You know, not to bang on the wood or the nail too much, but Nipsey Hussle passing not too long ago,
right.
was a perfect example. He didn't receive as much of the light as nearly his peers in the music industry do. Until he died. But the work he did in the community was enormous.
Right.
And then you see guys in politics who reached their peak because of the movie or because of some brand that they were able to right. get behind. And you had these guys who have been, you know, putting communities on their back and who have been on the forefront of all these movements for on people's behalf,
right.
you know, and they get no recognition, and it's just baffling. I think, you know, for the youth, I think
right.
the youth, we realized that there is a difference.
Right.
There's a difference in the way people want to mm-hmm. be treated and mm-hmm. the way people actually are treated.
Correct.
The way people want to be treated, that's the golden rule. You know, you would be with respect,
right.
kind, you know, polite to everyone. But the reality of it is, not everyone gets that same respect. It's
right.
almost like a ladder we're in. You know, some people are given this much respect.
Right.
Others are given this much. Well, how do we figure that out? Is it because of how much money they have? Is it because of, you know, how much we see them, how many likes they have?
Right.
It's, you know, it's an interesting culture we live in, but that's how our politics is run.
Right.
It's, you know, visually attractive. It's always on the news. It's on your phone. It's on every device you can think of.
Yep.
And it's something that gets everyone talking. So we just need to shift the conversation from one that's so divisive to one that's about the right things. How about we start promoting the positives that
right.
are going on? I think that would really change. And that's something that President Trump could do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it doesn't take a Democrat or a Republican to start promoting the good things
mm-hmm,
or,
mm-hmm.
or start focusing on things that could lead to change or change for, you know, the better.
Yeah, I don't even think it's so much President Trump, you
mm-hmm.
know, not that I disagree with you.
Yeah.
Because he could, as a leader, do that,
mm-hmm.
but he's still just one man, right? In regards to people saying we should have a president that represents everyone, well, that's never going to be, you know what I mean?
And that's the part.
Because, like, even Barack Obama did not represent everyone. I mean, there's still, you know, 40% of voters that did not vote for him. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, and there were still people that did not like him. I think the media makes Trump more polarizing because they'll take a soundbite, mm-hmm. and he gives them a lot. Like, they'll take a soundbite and cycle it and recycle it and recycle it and recycle it, right?
Yeah.
And so it hammers it, and it creates that division.
Yeah.
Continuously. And it sells. You know what I mean?
And I think that's the narrative that they want to sell.
That's the narrative. And then you take AOC. Hmm. This girl is a 28-year-old congressman from New York. Mm-hmm. And she's probably the second most popular politician in the country, mm-hmm. because of the media.
The media.
And you have people that hate her nationwide. They can't do anything about it. Her district is the only one that votes for her. You know, I was explaining that to a guy. He's, man, this girl just, I said, dude, calm down, man. You can never do anything about it. Like, until you live in her district.
You have to move there.
Until you move there and live in her district, there's nothing you can, like, she's a, and on top of that, I said, who's your congressman? He had no idea.
No. Because, I mean, for the most part, we have feelings for what we see the most.
Yeah.
You don't see your congressman, you see that congressman. So.
And that should be that should be upsetting that you don't even know yours.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Like,
I think another part to piggyback off of what you were saying, it's not as much knowing, mm-hmm. you know? I think a lot of the time, people don't know because people were never told.
That's right.
I don't know, you know, growing up, mm-hmm. until you see the signs, you know, along the side of the road,
right.
most times you don't know that there's an election or, you know, they're about to start voting pretty soon.
Mm-hmm.
So how do we start making these messages louder,
mm-hmm.
making more visible? Yeah, we know about the presidency, but what about the ones that lead up to the presidency?
Right.
The one that really decided when the electoral votes and all those things are tallied
right.
up at the very end. So it's amazing. It's truly amazing.
Well, I like the fact that the millennials are way more involved than my generation ever was, because you guys do care,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that scares the older generations, because it's like everybody's vying for your guys' support now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's like, hey man, so you have one sector that are calling y'all stupid and they don't know what they're doing and on and on and on. Well, because you're not on their side.
Yeah.
And then you have the other side that says, man, it's the greatest generation to come along in a long time. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Because there is that fear.
Yeah.
You know, as I mentioned in class to you guys the other day, when I was out in Florida, I met some kids that were at the school that had the mass shooting.
Mm-hmm.
And I was explaining to them, I was like, man, I'm so proud of you guys for no other reason but the fact that y'all organized after that shooting. Y'all got a lot of people's attention.
A lot.
When y'all organize, and not just at that school, nationwide. Like, they organized a rally, went to Washington, and you had a lot of politicians nationwide saying, oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
Because they know, I mean, they're probably responsible for AOC.
Yeah.
You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And a lot of young politicians, first-timers in Washington right now.
Right now.
And so you have a lot of sitting long-term politicians afraid.
Because they're like, we haven't really had anyone checking up on us like that.
Nobody checking up and challenging us.
Mm-hmm.
And hey, this 8-term, 9-term, 10-term guy just got beat.
Mm.
When my time comes, it may be me.
It may be me next.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I love that. You know, because the best way to keep a guy, you know, doing his job is making him realize he can lose it.
Yeah.
You know, that'll keep him on his toes. So the young generation, this millennial, hey, keep them on their toes. But with regards to what you were saying, like, with making it sexy, you know, what did I tell y'all about my book, the first book? I was like, I was really shocked that it took off as quick as it did.
Yeah.
Because I knew it was a responsible book.
Okay.
It wasn't cursing. It wasn't, you know, it didn't have no talk about nudity or you know, it wasn't wilding.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I said, books like that, it usually takes time. You know, it takes time to convince people to read it. And they go, man, it's a really good book. Kind of like with you and your mom. You read it and talk to your mom about
and tell
it.
Tell her, yeah.
And, but for whatever reason, you know, largely due to Dr. Sawyer, because when students read it, kind of like you, mm-hmm. a lot of the students that read Life is Not Complicated, they went home and talked to their parents about it.
Yeah.
And on and on and on, but it took off right away. And so that propelled it. But it took off a lot faster than I ever thought it would, because books like that normally don't, you know, and because it's usually the ratchet books.
Yeah, you know? It's the ones that, oh my God, yeah. stir up the controversy.
Exactly, and I refuse to write that type of book.
I like that style. Yeah. You know, it's straight to the point, and it's exactly what you need.
Because my thing is, I want to write the right book, not a right now book.
Okay.
You know, mm-hmm. yeah, I want my book to have the same message 50 years from now, 100 years from now, than like it does today.
That's the legacy. You know?
Yeah, that's the legacy, and that part's important to me. What would you say is the biggest concern with you and your peers about the future of our country?
The biggest concern is that the stories and the, you know, the advice that we've been given is one day not going to pay off. You know, we're told you're supposed to go to college, you're supposed to do this, you're supposed to do that. But what if one day the world changes and, you know, the system that we were brought up in collapses, and it's not our fault. I think that's the biggest fear for me and my peers and our generation, is the fact that we haven't even had a chance to grasp it yet. Mm. We're still in the process of infiltrating the whole, you know, special bubble that is adulthood.
Right.
And what if by the time we get there, it's not what we thought it was going to be?
It's no longer there.
It's not, you know, it's not as grand as it is now.
Right.
And it's through no fault of our own, but just through, you know, just the process of life.
Yeah.
And so what we want to do is, we're trying to get there fast. That's why it seems like we're in such a rush. Mm-hmm. It's not that we're in such a rush. And it's not like we're way more intelligent than any other generation.
We
figured it out. Like it's a maze, you know. It's a rat race to the top. And instead of going through the maze and taking a left and then reaching a stop and then turning around and after finding a different way, you have these innovators, these creators who are like, no, I'm gonna do it my way.
Right.
I'm gonna make it. You have these 20-year-olds, 30-year-olds becoming millionaires, billionaires, because they're not trying to go through that maze. They're improvising and saying, what's the quickest way to infiltrate, to get to that the top upper echelon level without having to go through the systematic, the K-12, then the college degree, then the wife and marriage. You know, it after a while it gets old, it gets boring, and it doesn't work.
Right.
So I think, you know, we're just trying to get it before it's gone.
Right.
Before it's all gone.
No, that's the biggest thing, amongst other things, that I love about the millennial. You guys are not afraid to take a chance. Mm-hmm. You know, like you said, they'll say, look, man, I know that that's the old traditional method. However, I want to try this.
Who says you can't?
Yeah, and of course, within reason, you know, but I love that. Mm-hmm. Because we were afraid, you know what I mean? We were afraid because, like you, we were told, look, man, this is the way to do it. Go to school, yada, yada, yada. The color in the lines, you know, and the Kanye, and color outside the lines. Like, and you guys love Kanye.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Y'all grew up loving, hey, man, college dropout, color outside the lines, and do what you do.
It's the youth, you know, it's what's new. And I think that's what captures a lot of people's attention. It's the fact that you don't have to do what someone tells you to do.
Right.
You can do what you want to do. Even if it's similar to what it would be like if someone was telling you what to do, the fact that it's not, that makes it more pleasurable. That gives you the motivation to wake up and say, yes, I do enjoy what I'm doing.
Right.
You know, it's gratifying.
Man. That's a good place to take another break, man. I'm enjoying this, brother. I'm enjoying it. All right, we'll be right back with you on the Life is Not Complicated Strong Opinions Podcast.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. The other 99 times. Count your blessings. Season 2, showing now on NetNY.TV, Theo's by Verizon, Channel 48. Optimum Channel 30 and Spectrum Channel 97. Season 1, streaming on Amazon Prime Video. Amazon Prime Video.
All right, we're back with you on the Life Is Not Complicated, Strong Opinions podcast. So continue with politics, man. You're in college, so you are in your classes. I'm sure you're in class with a lot of immigrants. What's the view of millennials when it comes to the immigration policies or what's going on now with immigration?
I think it's kind of foreign to us, because for a lot of us, especially in the state of Texas, we grew up in the same classrooms as a lot of these people who mm-hmm. are in college with us now. So to them, they're not immigrants. They're not someone who shouldn't be here. They've always belonged. Mm-hmm. And that's not to say people who aren't here shouldn't. It's just the ones who have been here, it's kind of crazy. Now, you do have people who come over later, and it's a little bit more obvious. I don't think it takes away from the feeling of belonging, but the language barrier is more evident. So it's a little bit easier to point it out, or, you know, it's more obvious. So at that point, I don't think, for the most part, my generation has a problem with the immigration problem. I think where the problem comes in are the related factors to immigration. Mm-hmm. I think people tend to focus on the negative mm-hmm. That come from having illegal immigration higher or more illegal immigration happening. Mm-hmm. People say, you know, the loss of jobs and this and that, you know, higher crime rate. I don't think that that's something that should be focused on. I think those should be noted. Mm-hmm. Those should be included in the conversation, but those shouldn't be the highlights of any decision. Mm-hmm. You should also look at what positives, what situations are some of them coming from. Mm-hmm. As a mental health professional in the psychology realm, we talk about this in class. Mm-hmm. And for some of the immigrants or people who are descendants of immigrants, they share their experience, how the education and the information they've learned in class, mm-hmm. they've been able to use that within their own families or taken back to them when they go visit others in their family to say, oh, hey, these are things that you can start implementing in your life now for when you come to the U.S. or if you do happen the chance to come to the U.S. And then also, just from a therapeutic sense, you know, mm-hmm. it all helps out. So I think it's beneficial in the educational realm specifically. It's not frowned upon at all. It's mm-hmm. something that's embraced. And I don't know if it's just because of how much education is put towards that, mm-hmm. Noting the importance of everyone getting a fair chance of education, whether it's K-12, college, or a master's degree, or if it's just talking about immigration and what illegal immigration means to the U.S., the history behind it. You know, you can't just think about illegal immigration now. You have to look back. What have we done with illegal immigration the past 20 years? Mm-hmm. What's our relationship with the countries we're having these discussions with? Mm-hmm. You know, we're just having one-sided discussions without including the other country we're talking about.
Right.
So there's a lot more to talk about and a lot more to focus on than just the negative.
Right. What always confused and baffled me is when I hear people talk about job loss, they focus on the immigrant, but they never bring up the company that hired them. Like, and I'm like, so you mad at the person that has the job, but you're not mad at the person that gave them the job. Mm-hmm. You're not mad at the person that took the job from you. Mm-hmm. You're mad at the person that replaced you.
And that goes back to doing some self-reflection.
Yeah.
That goes back to taking a look in the mirror and saying,
yeah,
what's missing from me that's making me feel this way?
Yeah, you know, I'm saying, so let me get this right, brother. You're mad at your wife's new husband, mm-hmm. not mad at your wife for divorcing you.
Yeah.
You are mad at yourself because you had something missing. You did. What were you not doing right?
What was lacking in your game?
What was lacking in your game? But you mad at the new guy. You don't even know this guy.
Hating on this game.
You hating on his game. I don't get it. You know what I'm saying? Like, let's look in the mirror.
And that's all. And a lot of people, I think a lot of people in America, young and old, because you can't get on young people without checking old people older people.
Yeah.
We got to take a look in the mirror. You know, we got to look at, okay, before we start calling out the next man or putting down the next person's opinion, what are my own?
Yeah.
How might someone perceive what I have to say?
Yeah, yeah. Because, man, reflection.
Mm-hmm.
And fix yourself. You know, do something about this. But you can't be mad at the person you don't even know.
No.
Yeah, and a lot of it is social media. You know, social media will just, like I said, cycle that hate, and before you know it, it'll tell a lie long enough that you'll believe it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's your take on social media, and are you on there a lot?
Yeah, I'm on there. I'm mostly on there private. I can't lie. I try to make all my accounts private.
What are you on, Facebook, Twitter?
I'm on Facebook, Twitter, Snapchat, Instagram,
uh-huh.
LinkedIn, that's something that I think is a tool. I'm in a career counseling course right now to finish my courses at HBU, and I just did some research on that very use, social networking sites and career counseling. I think that social networking has got a bad rap. Mm. We've focused once again on the negative of social media. Social media is one of the number one ways that students and individuals under the age of 25 get a job. The old-fashioned walking into a place of business and asking for a job resume,
yeah,
that's gone. You have to have an online resume,
yeah,
some type of online profile that lists your accomplishments, your tools, the things that you bring to the table, whether it's a Facebook business, Instagram business, where you have your own business and things like that.
That being said, be clean on Facebook.
And that's the thing. You can't have it and then turn around and you scroll down and see some, you know, inappropriate
and
stuff.
And you wilding out on Facebook.
And people get mad and say, oh, well, that's not fair. The next guy had his job before he started doing that crazy stuff. So you can't look at everyone's situation the same. But for the most part, I think social media could be used as a tool. You always have the knuckleheads out there. You always have the ones who don't know how to use and they don't know how to handle the responsibilities they're given.
Mm-hmm.
But if you know how to use it right, social media can take you to the next. I have seen social media take someone from someone who has great talent,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
who was just, they couldn't get their name out there,
mm-hmm,
to having their name everywhere in a matter of seconds.
Absolutely.
Just because of a hashtag or because of a few mentions from other people who may be well-liked.
Right.
And right there, you're instantly in the verified, you know, to be famous.
Right.
So. Yeah, social media, it's
And also
it's
a guy that was big and destroyed in a matter of minutes.
Now, people like to say that you can tarnish your career on social media.
You can.
You can, you know, take big L's. You can go backwards 3, 4, 5 steps.
But it's who you are.
It's
exactly. Just don't do it.
That
just,
and I don't think it's social media.
I think
it's the person.
That's right.
Because the same people who do those things are the same people who have those histories in the real world.
In the real world.
And so you don't see those mistakes very often with those clean-cut individuals.
No.
It's typically the ones.
You had to perform it for social media to capture it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's who you are.
Yep.
It didn't make it up. Social media didn't make it up.
And like, everything in the dark comes to light.
Eventually.
Always.
You know, I tell people, like, you don't catch me on social media saying or doing inappropriate things, mm-hmm, because, A, I never wanted to do anything to embarrass my parents' name, my grandparents, and even though they're deceased, they're gone. But now, I don't want to do anything for you to say, man, I can't believe Mr. Wallace did that. You know, I don't want to embarrass my children.
Yep.
Man, I can't believe my dad. Like, you know what I mean? And my biggest fear is an elder coming up to me saying, if your mom was still alive,
mm-hmm,
she would be ashamed of you. Like, that would just tear me apart. You know what I mean? So, those are the things that make me say, no, I can't do that.
And for a younger person, I would definitely say seeing the scandals of all those who've come before us.
Right.
The Donald Trumps, the Bill Cosbys.
Right.
These names that we've looked at in, you know, high praise for all these years, and to have these things come out years later.
Right.
We have cameras everywhere.
Right.
And my biggest fear is one day applying or running for a position, and to be denied because they're able to pull up a clip from 2008 when I was in the eighth grade or when someone, a girl, was in the sixth grade and pushed someone down. But just because we had the advent of social media and technology to pull it up, how many people are gonna get denied or have their careers negatively affected by that in the future? It's gonna be something to watch out for.
Absolutely.
Because if it's happening now with the limited technology that there was in the 80s and the 90s, I can only imagine what's gonna happen two, 3 decades from now.
I'm really proud of LeBron James, man.
Oh.
As big a star as he is, and you've never seen anything like
never.
It's amazing.
It's
because he's really the biggest, he's like one of the first biggest stars with social media, like his entire career. And you hadn't seen anything.
But he made it a point. He taught, if you know, you go back and watch his documentary, he made it a point. He said he wanted to be a role model.
Yep.
He wanted to be, and not just a role model for, you know, all kids, but for his community, Akron, you know, where he wanted to show those kids that we can look the way we look.
Yep.
We can talk or sound the way we, and be professional and not have a rap sheet or
and
a mugshot.
And he grew up without a father. Mm. He grew up without a father, and his mom is only like 15 years older than him, you know what I mean? And this guy, like, I don't care what anybody say, that's amazing.
He did it.
You know, and I'm not a real big LeBron fan as a basketball player. Like, I'm a Kobe guy, because like Kobe has the heart of a lion.
I'm a KD guy, so we're
same thing, but off the court, LeBron is definitely my favorite guy, you know what I mean? Because he's amazing.
He's definitely who you want your kids to look up to.
Without a doubt. Yeah, he without a doubt, off the court, he's amazing, man. And has an amazing team. This guy has investments in a little bit of everything.
Yeah.
He has already set himself up for retirement.
Yeah. I was surprised because, you know, I thought if he would have stayed in Cleveland, he probably could have gotten to politics.
Oh, dude, if he would have ran for governor on this next run,
he would have won without a doubt.
Yeah, it's not too late.
No.
I think he wanna test out the film business a little bit.
The Hollywood scene.
Yeah, but if he moved back in 20 years, he can win.
Hell yeah.
It's without a doubt, man. The general feeling about the adults in my generation and even older with you guys is that y'all are lazy and self-centered and of course just play video games.
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel about that?
It's laughable because some of it's true.
Mm-hmm.
The laziness definitely is true. I think a lot of it's just because, like you know, we talked about before, growing up, our parents wanted the best for us.
Mm.
So every time we fell, they were right there to catch us.
Right.
We got so used to someone being there to make sure everything was okay or aligned it perfectly for us. I just think that a lot of people don't give us enough opportunities to show how talented and how hardworking we really are. I think when they call us lazy, it's because of what we prefer to do, not because of what we can actually do. Now, though laziness is a choice, I still do think that our generation has a lot to offer.
I
think there's a lot of intelligence, and I think when put in the right situation, a lot of times, you know, and there's conversations in the psychology realm about, oh, people are misdiagnosed with ADD or ADHD and all the medication. I think if kids are just given the right task, they'll perform adequately. But sometimes if, you know, you give the kid a task that he's not willing to do, like with anybody, you're just gonna see low response.
Right.
And you can't expect every kid to stay in this fixated box.
Right.
You gotta challenge them, you gotta make it creative. You have to give them things that they haven't heard of before, they haven't seen before. So to say we're all just lazy or we all play video games, that's just a generalization. Cause like we talked about, that's to say everyone who's older is just strict.
Right.
You know, they don't want to have fun. They try to make the law and say if you get outside the law, you should be reprimanded, you know, just disciplined to the highest. No.
Right.
No.
And we know that's not true. No, I think anytime you make generalization, that's just insane.
Yeah.
You know. But
in 15 years though, if we're still lazy,
Oh, just call it what it is.
Yeah, then we're just, bum. The millennials will then forever be the lazy generation. We'll go from, because I think we're more selfish. I think my generation, we've heard it before, I think we're more selfish than lazy. And selfishness isn't always a bad thing when it's applied the right way. Mm-hmm. When you take selfishness, I'm taking it in the internal motivation, the motivation to say, what can I get? So if that means someone getting a job that we would have never thought could get a job, well,
that's a good thing.
Yeah. Now, we don't want it to the extreme selfishness where you're just rude to everyone, cutting people off, you just go to work for a check to go home.
Right.
But a selfishness to say, okay, this is who I am, and I know I have a family to provide for. Let me focus on us.
Right.
What I want to do in my career is I want to take a look at minding your own business. Minding your own business means to me is, it means taking a look at what you have.
Right.
What entities, what is a part of your web
right.
that connects to you?
My favorite question is, what does that have to do with me?
And how did because we get caught up in, what is that person doing?
Right.
How did that person get that much money?
What does that have to do with me?
If it's not about you, that's not your business.
That's right.
That's not, mind your own business.
Mind your business, man. Yeah, what does that have to do with me?
Mm-hmm.
But I have friends call me up, man, hey, what does that have to do with me, bro? Like, don't call me with that gossip, man. I don't want to hear it. What do you think is some of the things your generation has contributed to society?
I'd say we're definitely a big part of the technological boom. I think in the workplace, I think in the education system, I think the creativity that we offer for how to maintain interest from consumers. A lot of the surveys completed nowadays are completed by younger adults and children, because people want to know, what did children like? Mm-hmm. Before, people assume that children were stupid. Mm-hmm. Children aren't stupid, they just don't know.
Mm-hmm.
If they knew, they would be able to have a full-on conversation, or what they believe is a conversation.
Correct.
With you. I think, also my generation has provided a way to look at things from a bigger perspective. I think instead of looking at things so immediate, we can take a look at things further down the line.
Mm-hmm.
Things are being explored and innovated as we speak. Things that we would have never assumed was true are now being discovered today, or being disproved.
Right.
So I think just the idea of anything could be real.
Mm-hmm.
Not to harp in on the whole, fake news, or not fake news,
right.
but just saying, like, the things that we thought in the past,
mm-hmm.
These ideas we had, they can be changed. Like, the truth can be unfolded.
Right,
reality
right.
can change.
Right.
And I think that's what the youth is bringing.
Right.
Not fake news, but the fact that reality is changing.
Right. I like that. And we mentioned earlier that Congress, in this last election, there was a record number of young people elected into Congress with respect to AOC, and there's a number of others like her, that's not getting nearly as much press, but they're there.
Mm-hmm.
Do you like to see that, and would you like to see more?
Yeah, I would. I would like to see actually a diverse, I don't think it should just be all youth, because
mm-hmm.
then you're just focusing on the youth. I think it should be a good mixture
balance.
Because then you actually get a good representation of the American people.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the day, that's what the political system should be gearing towards.
Mm-hmm.
It should be, how can we shape our system to resemble what the reality of America is?
Mm-hmm.
It shouldn't be what America used to be or what America was, but what America is. And as it changes, then we change.
Mm-hmm.
And it's as simple as that. I think we just try to make it too complicated. The fact that we have these younger people emerging so quickly, I think that's just building off of the point that people are learning more. People mm-hmm. are able to figure this out earlier. Yeah. They're able to say, wait a minute.
Right.
It doesn't take us 30 years to figure that out. We can learn that in 5.
Right.
And so because we can learn that in 5, let's start there and then build up.
Yeah. Well, I said, you know, I was an organizer. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you knew that. Like, so let's say in this district, there's 10,000 votes mm-hmm. to be a congressman in this district. That's not a lot of votes. Like 10,000 votes. In all of Houston, all I need is 10,000 votes to win this district. A young person says, okay, 10,000 votes. Well, I have 5,000 people on my Facebook page, and about 2,800 of them are in Houston. Mm-hmm. So let me see how many of them are in this district that have family members that in this district. So when I break that down, and you guys are savvy enough that y'all know zip codes enough in this district, say, okay, 1,400 of them are in this district. So if I reach out to 1,400 and they have twice that in this district, their family members, now I'm up to, you know, over 3,800, 4,000. I have almost half the votes in this district. Like, young people know how to figure that
already
out.
Already calculated
right
it
now.
In,
you know
in
what
a
mean?
Day.
They're not knocking on doors. They don't have to. They can push one button on Facebook and all of a sudden they have, you know, 48% of the votes.
Yeah.
At the tip of their fingers, right there.
And some people like that. And a lot of people like that.
Yes.
I like that.
They ain't at nobody's church. Mm-mm. They're not printing flyers, knocking on doors. And meanwhile, the old politician is out there, you know, meet me at the town hall. And I'm like, dude.
Nah, it's going to be maybe 20 people, friends and family,
man.
Close ones.
Well, you know,
only.
I got to work. Yeah. You know, I can't make it. And you know, we having a bake sale. Well, you know, I might be down there. And I'm like, dude, you... These young people, so as the older politician, you need to take them under your wing mm-hmm. and groom them or, and don't make them your opponent.
Yeah.
You know, because if not this time, the next time they're going to beat you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
You better catch up.
You better catch up.
Evolve.
Because they're already blown past you. Mm-hmm. It's just that they need to make sure enough of their voters show up at the polls. Because if not, like I said, if not this time, the next time, they're going to beat you.
Yeah.
They already outnumber you, you know, because it's not enough. It's way more of them than there is of us.
And like, it's not a bad thing.
It's not even
like it's a bad thing that these guys, you know, if they say you have to take this guy under your wing because it looks like he's projected to beat you if he runs
against
you, then take him. Because that may actually help you. That may open up
everybody.
Your mind. You know?
It helps everybody, you know, because for you to reject... Mm-hmm. You just will die a quick death.
And you're closing your mind off.
Absolutely. Yeah, it helps everybody for you to just embrace and let's all evolve and grow.
And grow together.
Because if not, you know, he or she will beat you. They'll go in there inexperienced. We all suffer. And then they have on-the-job learning. So.
And then you and your opponents sit on the sideline throwing rocks about how you could have done better.
And you still out of a job. You're still out of a job. So we don't want that. So who's your greatest inspiration and why? And you can have more than one.
I was going to say, I definitely have more than one.
Yeah, that's cool.
My greatest inspirations, for one, is my parents. Both my parents, mom and dad, both graduated college. Both very successful at what they do in the education system and the realm. They've brought me up. Using kind of a model that's used by a lot of parents, you know, you got school and your extracurriculars, but they just spend so much time on me, my younger brother, and my younger sister, and preaching the importance of education and why you need it. Not so much what it is that you're gonna need and when you're gonna need, but why it's important and how you can take that with you.
Wow.
I just think that was something that they preached to us from a very early age. And it stuck with me for a while. Another big inspiration for me, someone who I really just admire, is our former president, Barack Obama. And though he's someone who's very easily liked and so easy to make the person who inspires him, he did a lot of things for me in his 8 years of office. What he did for me was he showed me how to be professional when you're under the microscope. I don't think there's any job more stressful than being the president, because you have hundreds of things coming at you at once, and you have to make executive decisions on most to all of the things that come your way. And not only juggling that, he had a family, a beautiful family at that, that he was able to grow. We watched grow and then
teenage
develop
daughters.
You know, and then had, you know, such an amazing family, to the point where you had people who wished his wife ran,
right,
who wished
right.
Michelle ran for president,
right.
Because how well she her, just how intellectual she was and the ideas she had for the youth,
right.
With the whole Get Fit campaign and eating better. So what he did in that respect was just amazing. And last, the last inspiration that I have is someone who is in sports radio and TV commentating, and his name is Stephen A. Smith. The reason why he has been so much of an inspiration for me is his professionalism, but also his consistency. He works almost nonstop every single day. And for someone who has a job, and we all know how stressful jobs can be. You gotta wake up, you gotta do the job, you gotta go home. And you're always looking for me time. Someone who dedicates their whole life, and it seems like all their me time is into their job. I feel like this man is always on camera, and it's a pleasure to watch, but also just listen and learn, because it's, you know, a lot of people are always just, you know, in front of you talking about whatever garbage is easy to sell. But a lot of times he's giving you lifelong messages in the commentary that a lot of people miss because of, you know, the circuits around what they're talking, if it's football, basketball, or baseball.
Mm-hmm.
But if you take these messages and you apply them to real world situations you may be going through, it does wonders.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you don't have to be a sports commentator to have that effect on people.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that he does. And I like him for that, because I love sports and I get to watch him every day whenever he talks about sports.
Yes, yes.
But he's just been an inspiration, and he's kind of been a role model for how to work hard.
Okay.
You know, a lot of times you get to that level, but you want to know, what does it take to become elite? It takes a little something extra. And you can tell he brings it every day he's
every
on
day.
TV.
All right. Okay. One last question. If you had the opportunity to travel back in time to a critical point in this nation, when would it be? What would you change and why?
What would it be? What would I change and why? I think the most critical point was the whole story of us coming over. And I think that's the origin behind America's biggest sin. The fact that Christopher Columbus didn't discover America, because how can you discover something that was already inhabited?
Right.
Now, there's a lot of controversy behind that, and I can't get into all the facts because I'm not a historian. But when that story was broken down to me, it kind of went against all of the stories we were told growing up in elementary school.
Right, right.
And I grew up in Virginia, so we were very close to the region and area that all this was happening. So I was surprised we weren't being told the real and honest truth. Now, I think a lot of it had to do because there was like a lot of death and stuff, so they probably didn't want to, you know,
right.
give that to us at that young age. But to know that there were people living here and they got driven off their land, and that's kind of how America started.
Mm-hmm,
that's very hard to swallow, especially when there's so many of us like myself who love this nation near and dear. Because it's like, how can we truly say we embrace everyone when the first thing we did, and I say we, but the, you know, colonists did, were they just pushed the Native Americans off the land.
Right.
So if I would go back, I would say, instead of pushing them, embracing them, instead of just taking their practices and then exposing it for beneficial
right.
Reasons, incorporating them in your culture,
mm-hmm.
making that the new culture, making America a truly embracing nation.
Right.
Because then we would originally be known as an embracing nation. We wouldn't be known as America, the greatest nation, except for if you're this group or that group or this group or that group.
Right.
Then we push you off to the side. But
and I don't even have a problem with that, because during that time, it was about that. It was like, you know, you show up, you fight, and whoever win, get this land. Like, I get that. just tell the truth. That's my thing.
Like, I was so shocked.
Yeah, like my thing is just be honest about it. Right. You know what I mean? I don't have a problem with you rolling up, beating up, and planting your flag and saying we took it and now it's ours. You deboed it, right? Mm-hmm. Just tell the truth.
Make sure you keep it consistent.
Yeah. Just don't come over and say, oh man, we sat down, we smoked a peace pipe.
Yeah.
We had this Thanksgiving feast, and I'm like, come on, man.
Kumbaya and all this great stuff.
Know, no. But I talk about that in my new book.
Like, yeah.
I talk about roots and how Alex Haley plagiarized it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah, I talk about that in my new book.
That's a good
so
one.
Be looking out for that.
I will. I definitely will.
yeah. It's pretty interesting, man. I'm sure it's going to be a lot of people upset, but it's, you know, you're supposed to tell the truth, but it's going to be all right.
Yeah, you can't do anything about that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anything else you want to say before we go, man?
Nah, it was a pleasure.
Hey, likewise,
this was my
man.
First one, and I enjoy it.
Hey, likewise. I appreciate you coming on, bro. Where can we find you? Anything, anywhere you want to tell them?
Right now, you can go on LinkedIn. You can find me on LinkedIn, Sean, S-E-A-N, Bogle, B as in boy, O-G-L-E, Junior. You can find me on Facebook. It is private, so you just have to request me to add as a friend.
Right.
Yeah, other than that, just if you see me on the street, say what's up. I'll say hey back. Then yeah, that's about it.
My man.
I appreciate it.
All right. It's a wrap. See you guys next week. Talk to y'all next week on Life's Not Complicated, Strong Opinion Podcast.
Please visit www.carloswallace.com. That's Carlos Wallace. We would love to hear your opinion.